This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com.
All right, welcome everybody to the fourth monthly meeting of the great comic book minds here at Place to Be Nation. Okay, great, my favorite statement. That's right. Another
Two out of five of us don't drink, so.
Yeah, that might make it a little difficult, but we'll come up with something. We'll come up with something that satisfies all of us. But in any event, as always, I'm Greg Phillips, one half of the Hard Traveling Fanboys, and I would like to welcome you to this Place to Be Network podcast, which you can also find on iTunes under Place to Be Nation. And with me, my fellow Hard Traveling Fanboy, the cynical Superman, Nick Duke. How are you, sir?
That's fantastic. I have nothing to say. Go ahead.
Excellent. I have Todd Weber, our West Coast representative, holding it down out there. Todd, how have you been? Excellent. Tim Capel, we have here from the beautiful state of intoxication in Virginia. Mr. Capel, how are you doing, sir?
Two drink minimum, right, Todd?
Two bottles of wine.
Well, Todd, how are you, actually,
I'm great.
By the way?
I just started. I'm fine. I'm good. We're good.
Excellent.
Wait a minute.
Russell
said. You said a minute ago that two out of five of us don't drink. Who are the two?
That's
what I'm wondering,
Russell?
Too.
I'm sorry.
I definitely do. I don't know what he's talking about. Who's the two?
I apologize for assuming.
Don't be sad. One out of five ain't bad. That's what Meatloaf once sang a long time ago in an early cut of his song. Russell Sellers, how are you, sir?
All right, dude, I'm exhausted. Free Comic Book Day has been awesome, but I'm here and I'm ready to talk shop with my favorite comic book people.
Absolutely. We always have some entertaining to us banter across the board here. With that being said, how many of us here experienced Free Comic Book Day today?
Hi.
Hello, yes, definitely.
Yep, absolutely, over here.
Tim?
Not so much.
Oh, gotcha. We'll get to that in a second. I will start off with Russell on this one, because I know you had a busy Free Comic Book Day at the local comic book store in Enterprise, Alabama. Tell us a little bit about the your Free Comic Book Day experience.
It was fantastic, man. The we had a huge crowd that just it kind of came in waves. Like from the minute the doors were open, people just kind of flooded in, and they would come by and not just pick up the free books. I mean, that was the main draw, but they also got to meet the local chapter of the Alabama Ghostbusters, which was a lot of fun. They also got to meet a local artist named Brett Brooks, who's actually out of Atlanta now, but he's originally from Ozark. He was here selling copies of his original work called Dust Bunny, and it's a book that I would highly recommend anybody to go and check out. But yeah,
really
super
nice
guy. He was doing sketches of any character for the different people that would come in and just do a donation to the shop. It was so much fun. We also had several cosplayers who showed up in like full superhero costume. We had a Superman, a Batman, and a Robin show up, and a couple of guys dressed as Imperial officers from Star Wars, which was completely unexpected. They just showed up, and I was like, "All right, that's awesome." But the crowd was great. This was easily the best Free Comic Book Day event that I've ever been to, and it was a big financial win for the shop too, because people were really into it. They were really interested in not just the free books, but like buying into comics. And I mean, seeing some of the folks who were coming in for the first time just light up whenever they found that one book that they were, you know, just really excited about. I mean, it reminded me of my first time being in a comic shop and finding that book that really got me into it. So, hugely amazing experience. I was glad I was able to help out at the shop today. And even as exhausted as I am, I'm kind of riding that high right now.
Yeah. Well, and it's important to realize, like, for those of us for those of the group that live in bigger markets, all the stuff with cosplayers and things like that may be common in bigger cities, bigger areas, but that's not very common for our area. You know, we live in a very I would say rural area of Alabama, and Enterprise is a pretty small town, and so we don't. It's the closest comic shop in a 90-mile radius.
Anyway.
So
there's a shop in, or there's a couple shops in Montgomery. I mean, you can go down to Crestview, and there's probably something that's right over in Georgia as well, just over the line. But Empire's kind of got the monopoly on the area as far as the Wiregrass goes.
Yeah, I actually went there to cover it for the newspaper, interviewed some people. It was really cool. Got to interview a couple of people that have never been in a comic book store before who came just for Free Comic Book Day to check it out and had a great time, and both said that they would be back in the future. And it also kind of opened my eyes a little bit to the importance of variety. I talked a little bit about this on Twitter, but there are a lot of comics that just aren't for me. Like an example that I use today is Red Hood and the Outlaws. I've pretty much despised that book since it started. I don't really like the Red Hood character and what they've done with him. But met an 11-year-old boy who that's his favorite character and that's his favorite book. And at the end of the day, I had to say, you know what? I don't like the book, but that's fine. It's good. It's a good thing if it's hooking kids the way that books hooked me when I was a kid. Stuff like Cable probably wouldn't have appealed to a lot of older readers when I was a kid, but I loved it and it hooked me into comics. So, you know, that's, to me, that's a good thing. What about you, Todd? How was your free comic day and thoughts on the
free comic
experience?
Book day? It's getting bigger and bigger here too. I kind of liken it for people who go to comic shops all the time. I try to liken it to somebody who's frequents bars, doesn't want to go to a bar on New Year's Eve. It's amateur night. You don't want to go to a comic book shop just to pick up your saver on Free Comic Book Day. You'll never get in. There's so many people there in line, and the store's crowded. But what's awesome is it's people coming there for the first time. Now, I personally had Little League this morning, first thing, so I didn't get to experience the lines. But I had called my friend who works at the shop, and she pulled the things I really wanted, the DC books and the Guardians of the Galaxy stuff, and put those in my saver as a gesture. And then took my sons after baseball today to the local comic book shop, and they picked out, Sonic the Hedgehog, and there was a very cool Mouse Guard hardcover that we checked out. That's really cool. And just some of the Just for Kids books. So very cool. The Teen Titans Go as well. It's neat. It's a great event. Unfortunately, I don't think most comic shops are big enough to handle the traffic to an optimal thing where somebody's coming in to get the free books, then can shop comfortably and see, oh, look, they have all this great stuff that, you know, it's just not comfortable a browsing experience at the comic book shop that day because it's just so crowded. If there's a way you can maybe rent some temporary retail space that's a little bit bigger, because Free Comic Book Day is not peaked yet. I think it's going to get even bigger and bigger, and it's awesome. Hopefully we get some new readers out of it. Personally, it's a really uncomfortable shopping experience, but that's not the point. It's not for me. So very cool, and it did, again, the shop owner said it was much bigger this year than last year, so I have to assume, and there were people buying stuff too, so I have to assume, all in all, it's a very, very good thing.
Absolutely. Nick, what about you? How was your local shop? How was the experience for you? And what was the day like?
A lot of shops don't really have space to host this type of event. So what here in Columbus, Georgia, what our shop does is actually kind of a cool partnership with the local Space and Science Museum, the Coca-Cola Space and Science Center. It's basically turned Free Comic Book Day into a giant celebration of nerd culture.
Awesome.
What our guy does, our comic book shop owner, he closes down the shop. He packs up about 70% of his long boxes full of back issues. He packs up his entire selection of new comics and new graphic novels, and he moves it over to the Space and Science Center for a day. They let people in for free. He's set up in a conference room there, so you can come in, browse through stuff, pick up your free stuff. And at the same time, all these Space and Science exhibits are open. The Astronomy Dome with the reclined chairs installs a projector for that weekend and plays different superhero movies. Today we were there, they were showing the first Amazing Spider-Man. So it's just kind of a cool thing. You know, there's lots of cosplayers. You have other groups. The local Star Trek fan group was there. They're always trying to get more membership. The local tabletop store, for tabletop games was there and actually doing live demonstrations, trying to teach people how to play the games and stuff if they weren't familiar. So, ours has way expanded beyond just comics, and it's very cool. You get a lot of people there who just walk in off the street because the Space and Science Center is located in downtown Columbus, and it was actually held in conjunction this year with like a kind of a downtown festival or whatever. So there was a ton of people just walking in off the street who had no clue what was going on. Got in for free, picked up some comics. I know I saw a ton of kids there who had never been in a comic shop before, including one kid who was begging his mom to buy him the entire Onslaught hardcover. And luckily that didn't work out for him. It was just a great day. I think it's like you guys said, it's just growing bigger and bigger. And one of the things that I love is it's kind of become an entire weekend thing, because now that first weekend in May has also become a huge tentpole date for big superhero movies. And so you kind of get that, this year it was Amazing Spider-Man. Last year it was, Iron Man 3. And you kind of get that, just that perfect weekend of hotly anticipated superhero movies with the free comic book day. And it's just a great thing for the industry. And I just hope that, our local comic shops can, have some full-time visitors now out of these type of events. I don't know what the numbers are like on retaining those guys, but I certainly hope it's trending in the right direction.
Hey, Nick.
Yeah.
Don't forget, May the 4th be with you.
Yeah, that's...
I'm not going to make fun of that, because I am actually crossing my fingers that my wife goes into labor tomorrow. So,
Okay.
That's...
On that note, let's move on to Mr. Capel. You did not experience the joys of Free Comic Book Day, but tell me a little bit about your thoughts on the event
in general, and
any experiences you may have had in the past.
In theory, like the idea behind the concept of FCBD is great. And I think Todd made a really good point when he said that, it's not for him. It may not necessarily be for me either, as kind of that hardcore dyed-in-the-wool fan year after year to go out there. But that said, I do have a lot of really great local shops, actually. And when I wasn't strictly a trade waiter, the establishment that I frequented most often definitely puts on a really great production when it comes to Free Comic Book Day. And I'm not sure what they did this year, but in years past, they've always gone all out for it. So it's always cool to hear about you guys' experiences and getting the most out of an event like that. And I know that this is something that is sponsored by Diamond, is it not? Year after year. So as much flack as Diamond catches for being the monopoly, for not being the greatest distributor, but kind of the only choice that a lot of our great retailers have, it's a good thing that they do.
And Diamond, for those that don't know, Diamond is kind of, I guess, the go-between the comic book publishers
That's great. They're the wholesaler. That's who your local comic shop buys their books from, Diamond Comics. There used to be a whole lot more, but for events that for reasons that we probably don't have time to get into, the playing field has been leveled, and they're the last one standing, and not everyone has been happy with that. But, that said, good on them for doing this and capitalizing on it year after year and just getting that good publicity that I think the industry really needs. And especially aligning it with, like Nick said, the tentpole event, whether it's a movie, a big opening, that, when people are actually thinking about this stuff, it's about, optimizing your revenue and your foot traffic in these local shops. So good on them for that. And I definitely applaud them for the effort. In years past, I've definitely picked up some great books. and really made a day of it. Like I said, I was really loyal to my local shop at one time. And it's just awesome to see people who, you know, this is all new to them, and to see what it's all about, and to pick up something that actually resonates with them, I think is the best you can hope for. Not just the day in, day out, you know, cynical, jaded fans like all of us on this call, maybe. Speak for myself, I guess. But it's just a great event.
It's interesting you mentioned that, to see books that resonate with them, because it kind of goes back to the idea of the variety of the books. Because another girl that I met at the shop, she said she's been a comic book fan for about 8 years now, and hardcore comic book fan, but only for the comics that she reads. And she, oddly enough, her favorite comic book is the Aliens comic book series from Dark Horse. All the Aliens books. And so I said, okay, so you must be a fan of the movies. And no, she's not a fan of the movies at all. She just loves the Aliens comics. And that's cool to me, because it's different. You don't hear that on the, amongst our group, you know?
No doubt.
It's interesting to see the people
example
come in and have their own viewpoints and things.
I just wanted to say, you know, we've all mentioned our local comic shops today, and I feel like we would be remiss if we didn't take the opportunity to kind of throw out a shout out to our own local comic shop. So if you're ever in the Columbus, Georgia area, stop by Columbus Book Exchange, see Mr. Pat, he'll take care of you. Because without these guys staying in business, you know, we the fans, we don't have an outlet for the medium that we love. So it's important that we support these guys and make sure that they're doing well.
Yeah, definitely. If you're in the Enterprise Wiregrass area of Alabama, you need to stop into Empire Comics on Glover Avenue. It's the only shop, the only comic shop within, like Greg said, 50 miles of, you know, in any direction. And he's Kelly Poole, the guy that owns it and runs it. He's it's a one man operation. He's really put a lot of his life into this, because he just loves it so much and loves sharing it with people. And that's really been, you know, so that's another reason that he and I became friends, is because of that. But since I live in Montgomery, I got to plug Capital City Comics too. That's another really great shop that if you're in Montgomery, you need to visit that.
And all right. Can I go ahead and, even though, yeah, I wasn't there, I still hope that they're doing really good business. The guys who always took really good care of me were Richmond Comics in the greater Richmond, Virginia, Tri-Cities area. Look for Frank Miller. Yes, that's his name. The owner of the shop. He'll take good care of you. I don't know if that's his real name, but that's how we know him. Or KC Carlson. KC being a former DC editor, yep, as a matter of fact. So you may recognize that name. He sure did.
Yeah.
Married to the Joanna Draper Carlson. I'm not sure how active she is these days, but she used to be a pretty prolific commentator sort of in the early 2000s. Again, I've sort of fallen out of that whole circle of online, you know, comics commentary and fandom, but good people, those guys.
I have two savers. I'm kind of weird that way. I have a saver for my kids at the neighborhood comic shop, where my kids get Teen Titans Go and the Green Lantern animated comic, and basically just local comic store there. It's just in the neighborhood, about a mile away from my house. But I've had a saver for the last 25 years at A1 Comics in metropolitan Sacramento. Just a really big shop that's awesome, run by former NFL player Brian Peets, and they plug our show, they plug our columns, so I really am loyal to that store.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
In that case, A1 Comics is A-okay with me. And this gives me a great opportunity to remind everyone that, once again, you can catch all of our wonderful columns at placetobenation.com. That's placetobenation.com. Now, this brings me to my next question. I was going to ask all of you guys, what is the best Free Comic Book Day specific comic that you have gotten in your history with Free Comic Book Day?
Boy, there,
Todd, I'll start with
I
you since you were just talking about your
only one I
Free
can
Comic
really,
Book Day
really
experiences.
Remember well as being kind of, oh, that's awesome, was the New 52 preview book from 2 years ago? I guess it was two, maybe 3 years ago. Had a Jim Lee cover and Justice on it, and kind of tying up Flashpoint and getting ready for the new 52 Justice League number one. So the new pre-book that came out, at least I think it was 3 years ago. Jeez,
that would be 2011, right?
It's all a blur, gentlemen.
3 years ago. Yeah. Yep. Well, that's very cool. Certainly, that was a one for a lot of people. So many new comic book readers were coming in at that point, or were starting to hear about the new 52 coming. So that was definitely a cool one. Tim, do you have any memories of any good ones that you got, or one that stands out as being the best you've gotten during your free comic book day days?
I was venturing out on a particular base. It's a book called, I think it was called, it was the X-Men free comic book day called Pixies and Demons, I think it was. I don't know that it was the best offering in the world, but for me, in reading this, just realizing the objective they were trying to fulfill, which was, okay, this is the entry-level book for new readers. You had a really great kind of, I guess you could say, point of view character, and a new character called Pixie, who was part of the whole she was a holdover from the Grant Morrison period on those books, when they were kind of doing the New Mutants Academy X, kind of making it like a Hogwarts school kind of thing with the that franchise. So that had fallen by the wayside after like House of M and M Day and all that stuff, but this character was still around, and they were pushing her pretty hard. She sort of became like the new go-to, like Wolverine sidekick, which they always do with these young female characters, which has sometimes unfortunate implications, which we'll not get into. But she was that point of view character in kind of that early 2000s period. So she was who, new readers could sort of identify with. This was all new to her as a character, just in the same way as it's new to the readers. And of course it brings in all the other big name characters towards the end, and they sort of save the day. But it's like, that's what you want to look for in a free comic book day offering, is something that sets the stage, gives them something they can identify with, isn't heavy on all this characterization and character development that they don't necessarily care about when it's the first thing they've picked up. They just kind of want to see some action and something, at least someone they can identify with and dig into and say, okay, that really resonated with me. Like I said, that's the example I was headed towards earlier. Of kind of my best experience at an outing like this was just seeing what the potential of something like that could be. And I think that that issue really exemplified that. And, I haven't met a lot of people who have said that was what got them into the comics or what have you. But, the fact is it definitely got into a lot of hands. It went pretty quick, it seemed like. And I think that's the best you can really hope for.
Definitely. And opening up new eyes to the books and giving hopefully somebody a hook that they can get into the series and the franchises and things like that. It's definitely a big opportunity for the publishers that they haven't always taken full advantage of.
I would probably go back to
Russell. What about you?
Not
what's
that far
the,
back, actually.
The, your
I think
top pick for the best
when the
free comic
Trinity
book
War,
day book that you've gotten during
DC
the years
free comic
of
book day offering
event.
Came out? Because we had been hearing that this big crossover event, this big like line wide crossover event was coming, where there was going to be this thing called Trinity War. It was all based around the idea of what had happened with the launch of the new 52. It was kind of like maybe a sequel event to Flashpoint, and it was also the first time we ever saw Simon Baz drawn in a comic book, and he's kind of since become one of my favorite characters to read. But just the ideas that were presented in it were really intriguing. They took the idea of Argus and really expanded it and turned it into something that kind of made it DC's answer to S.H.I.E.L.D. With just as many skeletons in its closet. In fact, it had multiple closets that it referred to as like the green, red, and I think the black room, or black rooms as they were. And as I got into it, I was like, man, there's just so much here. It made me want to go and read the other Justice League books that I wasn't really reading at that time. So, I mean, after that, I gave Justice League Dark a chance, and for a while it was really good. But I credit that book with getting me to try out new things, and easily one of my my favorite pickups for a free comic book day.
Yeah, very cool. And that's, you know, for us anyway, that's definitely the idea, is to for more lapsed people is pick up a comic book that will hopefully show us some new angle that makes us intrigued again about trying out a book that we haven't read for a while or maybe not at all.
You know, you just said the idea is to kind
Nick,
of
I think we're going to probably
get you to
have
pick up books you wouldn't normally pick up, but that wasn't
the best free comic
that wasn't the case at all with this one. I was already going
to
buy every issue
Nick,
of Blackest
go
Night
and let you
before
give
it ever came out. But Blackest Night Zero, the year they did Free Comic Book Day for that, was actually, you know, it isn't really must-read material to view the rest of Blackest Night, I don't feel, but it was really kind of a touching issue. I mean, because it's essentially Barry Allen, who's recently returned from the dead, and Hal Jordan, who's, you know, not that far from being dead, standing at the grave, or the supposed grave of Bruce Wayne at the time, just kind of having a discussion on their different experiences with death and what it was like dying and being brought back. And it's a really cool moment for these two characters who hadn't been able to interact really in so long, because Barry had been dead since, you know, since 85. And you'd had limited interactions with, you know, Barry popping up in and out of the Speed Force or whatever and all running around as a Spectre. But it's really the first time that those two characters in their truest incarnation were able to hang out together on a page. And it reminds you of why that relationship is so cool and why those two characters are so great together. And it really set an ominous tone, I felt, for the event that was to come.
Yeah, and mine is going to end up being the same one. I was originally, when this question was first thought up, going to say the Countdown to Infinite Crisis one-shot that was $1. But that actually came out a couple months before Free Comic Book Day. I just got it on Free Comic Book Day, so that doesn't count. But I'm going to go with Blackest Night Zero as well, because it really whet my appetite for the event that was to come. Not that it really needed to be, because I was so into Green Lantern at that point, but it actually was the book that made me decide to stop trade waiting Green Lantern and start picking up the single issues again. And certainly got me really excited. And I felt like it got a lot of people really excited for the event. Which is, again, the idea is to spur excitement, whether it be for new readers or lapsed readers or existing readers. But kind of wrapping this whole Free Comic Book Day discussion up, I wanted to get back to a topic that we talked about a couple months ago doing. This is going to be something a little bit different for us, where each member of the panel, if you will get a chance to ask one other member of the panel one comic book related question. It could be any question, and then that panelist will have free reign to respond
okay.
In kind.
I'm going to draw
and
my hand.
I am going
to
start this
and draw name
little
here.
Discussion with yeah. Todd.
Oh, look,
and
I've
let
got
Todd
Nick Duke
ask
so.
any one of us a question
Duke.
Of his choosing.
This is a Battle Bowl like level of randomness right here. Is what's going on? Yeah,
Nick Duke, you live in Georgia. And
no, I can't believe
why
it.
Why is your bulldog
folks, this,
not named
this
Uga?
Is a shocker.
Oh, that's not it.
absolutely.
Nick,
the lethal
both,
lottery has
share
begun.
Love for Ultimate Spider-Man. I'm a big fan of, especially that initial, I guess, 100 issues or so were just so
ended,
good.
Ended at 150 whenever they killed off Peters.
Okay.
160, excuse me, 160.
Yeah, I'm thinking specifically of the Bendis Bagley part of it. I think it just changed a little bit, maybe just in tone, When Bagley left. But when was that? That was 110?
112, if I remember correctly.
Very good. And that was, as you've said, kind of the introduction to Spider-Man for you, the introduction to comics in general to you. Is that right?
Yep, absolutely. Okay. It was the first book I ever read more than one or two issues of, yeah.
So when you think of Spider-Man, you think of that Spider-Man.
Absolutely.
So do you think Marvel should have cut the cord with their old universe, and when after that first maybe wave of Ultimate books came and they saw that there was some good quality, especially in Ultimate Spider-Man and Mark Miller's The Ultimates, at least the first one, maybe the second one is pretty good too. Do you think they should have just killed the main universe and made the Ultimate universe Marvel main, such as DC has done? DC reboots its continuity every 30 years. You had the Golden Age, you had the Silver Age, you had, well, up till Crisis, and then you had Post-Crisis, and now we have New 52. And say what you want, everybody grumbles at the beginning, but then we learn to love it. We learn to accept it, and we recognize that, you know, the stuff we used to like Justice Society, well, those books still exist. We can still go back and read those books. They're just not coming out now. Everything comes to an end. So do you think Marvel should have done that too?
You know, that's a tough question. To me, I'm going to say no, and here's the reason. Not because I don't love the Ultimate Universe, because even still in the watered down, Jeff Loeb bastardized version that's come since the events of Ultimatum, it's still something I follow and it's still near and dear to my heart. But the reason why I say no is this, because the concept behind the Ultimate Universe, to me anyway, was not just a date and a revision of the characters, but it was also an opportunity to make things easy to follow, to streamline an entire universe's continuity. You pretty much only had to read really four books, Ultimate Spider-Man, X-Men, Ultimates, and Ultimate Fantastic Four, and even that one you could really debate on whether it was necessary or not, to really understand the entire scope of that whole line of comics. You know, it wasn't something like the mainstream Marvel Universe where they print, 60, 65 books on a given month. This was something where, for those people who were new to comics, it was a great starter, I guess, for lack of a better term. And I feel like if they would have ever made that change, and I know it was talked about, that's been a rumor that it was discussed at one point. I don't know how far along those discussions ever got. But you would have had to expand the balloon so far on the Ultimate Universe that I feel like it would have really diluted and watered down what was making it so successful at that time. Now, granted, in the years since, it's kind of, you know, gone off on the wayward path. But even off on that wayward path, it's still given us great, you know, something great like Miles Morales, which is a character who speaks to so many people. And I was one of those people who was so against killing off Ultimate Peter Parker when it happened. And now, like, seeing the way that Brian Michael Bendis has handled it in the pages of the Ultimate Universe and what Miles has become to so many people, I can't complain about that. That's a great invention that we were given. So as much as I love the Ultimate Universe, as much as I wish that more people were more well-versed in really, like you said, the first really like 6 years, or not six, not more than 6 years really, because it started in what, 2000? The first 8 years of that universe are really just some of the best comics writing you'll find, because you got Bendis doing his thing on Ultimate Spider-Man. You got Mark Millar, Bendis, Brian K. Vaughan, and Robert Kirkman writing Ultimate X-Men for the first 80 issues or so of that run. You've got Millar doing the Ultimates, and then also you've got Millar and Bendis doing Ultimate Fantastic Four. I mean, it's just four books, very high quality, easy to follow for new readers, you know, updating things for new continuity. And, you know, for anybody who hasn't checked out the Ultimate Universe, especially Ultimate Spider-Man, like, you got to get there. You got to see what Bendis did with that character over the course of 160 issues and now carrying on with Miles Morales. So great question. But I feel like, you know, in the end, doing that would have just kind of taken away from what the Ultimate Universe was really all about.
Well, can I follow up?
I
think that the Ultimate Universe is kind of slow, like forces of entropy are working upon it. It's dwindling, and I don't know a whole lot of people other than maybe you who are following it anymore.
And to be honest, I'm really not following that heavily. You know, yeah. I picked back up with Cataclysm because the rumor was they were going to kill off the universe, and of course I wanted to be there for that. And then Cataclysm was what it was. It was okay. It wasn't great. But then they grabbed me back in with You know, creating a the all-new Ultimate series, which features Kitty Pryde and Miles Morales on the team. And next to Ultimate Peter Parker, I would argue that Bendis did more with Kitty Pryde than any other character that I probably read in the Ultimate Universe. Just fantastic character development over the course of a decade, pretty much since he was introduced. She's become one of the most fascinating characters in that universe, and I love to see her now side by side with Miles. And then a couple weeks ago, when Bendis dropped the 200th issue special edition of Ultimate Spider-Man, like, that was a tearjerker if a comic book if I've ever read one, and that completely hooked me in. So I'm going to be picking up the Miles Morales relaunch when it starts. So.
I think, not to interject here, but I just did, so I don't know why I'm saying that I didn't interject. What was the event a few years back? Was it Ultimatum by Jeff Loeb?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
It was, you know, and
the idea was to reinvigorate that line, right? Was, okay, it strayed too far from its intended purpose. It's got too much baggage, too much continuity here. It's creating the same problems that the Ultimate Universe was conceived in order to get away from. So let's clear the deck.
Tim, that may have been the initial idea, but that wasn't how it played out. Because
exactly,
let me tell you this: like, I know we as fanboys can get really upset when changes are made to characters that we know and care about. But that Ultimatum series, and even before that, Ultimates 3, which followed Mark Millar. Jeff Loeb actually wrote Ultimates 3, which was a technically a lead-in to the events of Ultimatum. That was as big a middle finger and fuck you to the fans of that line of comics as you'll find.
Yeah.
It was nothing but issue after issue of characters acting completely out of character, acting, you know, killing off characters that really the story didn't even call for to be killed off. And then when they do the line-wide relaunch in the wake of it, instead of resetting everything with a new continuity, they're still making callbacks to things that happened 60, 70 issues ago. So if your idea is to relaunch the continuity and make it, you know, more accessible, I'm all for that. But that's not what happened.
Unless
they re-tagline it with some of the most confusing nomenclature. We had things running around like, after Ultimatum, renamed it Ultimate Comics. So we had Ultimate Comics New Ultimates, Ultimate Comics Avengers,
that's
Ultimate Comics
favorite.
New Avengers, Ultimate Comics X, not X-Men, Ultimate Comics X, just
Ultimate Comics X.
It's Ultimate Comics this.
Ultimate Comics Ultimates, yeah.
Yeah.
I think what it did was, rather than being a jumping on point, it was a huge jumping off point for a lot of people because
I was one person who was buying
God,
every
don't
Ultimate
you
book
get
there was,
confused.
And
it's
after
Ultimate,
Ultimatum,
damn.
I dropped down to
all
just Ultimate Spider-Man.
It's
and the only reason I didn't jump on Ultimate Spider-Man because Bendis was on it, but even after Ultimatum, they relaunched the Ultimate Spider-Man with a new, terrible, anime-inspired art style that was a far departure from anything that it came before. I was on the verge of dropping that book, and that's like, it takes a lot for me to drop that book. And it wasn't because of the writing. The art was just so bad that thankfully that only lasted, I believe, 11 issues, and then they went back to a more traditional art style and then jumped straight into the Death of Spider-Man arc, which wound up being, you know, fantastic, actually. So,
right. It turned the Ultimate Universe into what every alternate universe experiment is. It's, you know, the new universe started off strong, then sales dwindled, and it turned into this thing where, well, it's not the real universe that people are following.
Other
we
than
can
all
do
that,
anything.
Though, Ultimate
so we're
going to
blow
great,
up
right?
Pittsburgh. So they blew up Pittsburgh. Fan fiction, because John Byrne had a bug up his ass about Jim Shooter. Anyway, then the 2099 universe fell into the same rut. And what did they do? They like flooded the entire planet or something like that.
Ultimatum. Ultimatum flooded the entire planet.
I know that did the same thing. But through the same methodology.
Ultimatum involved somehow Thor died during the events of Ultimates 3. Magneto, using his Magneto powers, gained control of Mjolnir and used it to realign the Earth's magnetic poles to the point where he was causing massive flooding, which somehow the panic of that inspired the Blob to go running around biting the heads off of the various members of the Ultimates.
The Wasp, right?
He ate the Wasp. It sounds awesome, but it's not. Cyclops, if I'm not mistaken, winds up.
He blew Magneto's head off. Yes,
blew Magneto's head off, but Magneto threw Mjolnir at the same time and knocked Cyclops' head off. After he had already ripped the adamantium out of Wolverine's skeleton and used Mjolnir to dissolve.
This sounds awesome.
There were so many characters that got killed off during that. Oh, it was pretty much like, I think it was a 5 or 6 issue limited series, and I think there were 3 major character deaths in every issue.
There were a lot.
There were at least 15, yes.
And I'm not done yet. Mutant X. Remember we were talking about Mutant X, and I recommended that everyone go out and read that and hate read it for Howard Mackey's tremendous efforts in the post X Factor Volume 1 landscape of the X-Men universe in the late 90s when Havoc blew up the moon. That was sort of the climax to that series. It did the same thing. It started off strong, and then they turned into, it's an alternate universe. We can do whatever we want. So Captain America is going to turn out to be the Beyonder, and Havoc's going to blow up the moon because we can do that.
I get that because, you know, the alternate universe, it kind of got bastardized. But the thing is, Marvel had really done a great job of making Bendis and Bagley's, 111, 112 issue run seem like a big deal. It felt different to me going back and reading up on it than any of the other alternate universes they had done that thing to. And I wanted to bring this up because when you got to talking, it reminded me of Chuck Austin. I've actually been doing a Ultimate Universe reread on the excellent Marvel Unlimited service. And I actually did not realize there's a 2-issue arc of Ultimate X-Men written by Chuck Austin that introduces Ultimate Gambit. And apparently, according to Wikipedia, because of that story and how well it was received, that's what got him the mainstream X-Men writing job that you hate so good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it did. It wasn't tremendously great or awful. It was just kind of one of those transitional, just a fill-in thing after Millar had finished his run. I think, that Brian Kane
finished his first 2 story arcs, and then he came back and wrote another one. Yeah. And then they gave it to Bendis for 2 story arcs, and then Brian Kane comes in.
Yeah, and I was not a fan of the Bendis arc. That was at the height of the decompression era. It was like 7 issues of not a whole lot of stuff happening. And yeah, then there was a Chuck Austin thing, and then it was Brian K. Vaughan, if I'm correct. It was like, okay, Chuck Austin, never heard of this guy, but that's fine. He did okay here. And then he just started getting stuff left. He started getting work left and right, and that's when the cracks really started to show.
Yeah.
But
I just want to, real quick, sorry. Just to kind of put a coda on this Ultimate Universe discussion, for all intents and purposes, unless you really want to read Miles Morales, you can pretty much end that universe with the story of Ultimate Peter dying, because he was the inspiration for that entire thing. And one of my favorite things that the Ultimate Universe ever produced, after Death of Spider-Man, Bendis wrote a little miniseries called Ultimate Fallout. There were no fights, there were no action. It was just all about all the different characters in the Ultimate Universe that Peter had impacted in some way during his life, and it was just very emotional, kind of a cathartic 6-issue story that wound up that Ultimate Peter story and put a bow on it in such a beautiful way that anybody who's never read it, if you read Ultimate Death of Spider-Man, turn right around and pick up Ultimate Fallout, because the story isn't complete without that.
It's just too bad that Ultimatum is this 800-pound gorilla in the room, because it really took away from some great character work that Bendis did on Peter Parker and Miles Morales, who I think is a really worthwhile character. And it just sort of sucks that he's saddled with this kind of dead-end imprint that isn't necessarily going anywhere, but they won't let it die. But that's to take nothing away from who he is as a character.
Yeah.
And some great stuff that's happened since that period. So
I think if they ever kill off the universe, he's probably the one character that you can feel pretty safe.
They need to salvage him. They really do.
Yeah. He'll move over if they ever kill it off, but he'll be the only one, in my opinion.
Scarlet Spider. No,
it's a brand. It's a name. You gotta keep that intellectual property alive. Keep that trademark alive.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out the Kevin Kelly Show each and every week. PlaceToBeNation.com. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today. Plus, be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, PlaceToBeNation.com.
What's Let me know you in the house.
This is the king of old school, Steve Corino, and you've heard all the rumors, and it's true. The Steve Corino Show is here. We talk about wrestling. We talk about baseball, movies, television, anything you want to talk about. New guest every week. That's right. The Steve Corino Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
Hey, this is Bauer from The Bauer Show, sports and more. You can check out The Bauer Show podcast every Wednesday and Friday right here at placetobenation.com.
The Bauer Show.
Chad, do you hate it when commercials one and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on placetobenation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast exclusively at placetobenation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and... Shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds terrible. The Titans are wrestling... Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans are wrestling off.
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for the show at Breakdown Matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Bob. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling.
You know you want to hear it.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week you can join Marcus Vanderberg, Big Nasty Alfred Kunawa, and myself on the Kings of Sport podcast, available exclusively on placetobenation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Hey, this is Ben Morse from Marvel.com as well as the Brad and Chad Show, and I've got a new podcast. Well, I'm part of a new podcast, Place to Be Nation's Main Event. Hosted by Scott Criscolo every other week, it's a roundtable discussion with myself, Andrew Reich, Steve Willey, Jordan Duncan, and an assortment of special guests as we talk wrestling today, the big questions, and our feelings. Please, please, please check this podcast out, because if the ratings go down, I know I'm the first head on the chopping block for Justin Rosero. See you guys every other week on Place to Be Nation's Main Event.
I'm Scott Criscolo, and your new home for sports is Place to Be Nation's Extra Point. Join me and the doctor, George Urbelino, for your sports hookup, whether it's NFL, Major League Baseball, NBA, colleges, or the Cowboys MMA Blitz.
Forget about it. Plus, join me for my prescription where I will solve all the world's sports problems with my own brand of medicine.
That's Place to Be Nation's Extra Point here on PlaceToBeNation.com.
In Rhode Island and looking for great food and a fun atmosphere, we'll be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick, with over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers. And a fully stocked bar, Bonehead's has something for everyone. Boneheads also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So, be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Place to Be Nation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
What's up, wrestling fans? This is Jeff Peck, and you can check out my wrestling podcast, The Still Real to Us Show, every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com. It is a wrestling podcast from a fan's perspective, and we're not doing it in our mom's basement. So check it out every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Looking for new wrestling, sports, and pop culture voices? Head over to PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We have an extremely talented staff that covers comics, video games, and all facets of entertainment. Our sports coverage spans all the major professional and collegiate sports, including MMA. Our fresh takes on professional wrestling are some of the best on the internet. Don't forget to check out our fantastic podcasts as well, including the voice of Ring of Honor, Kevin Kelly, exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Also, be sure to check out our friends at TheHistoryOfWWE.com, ProWrestlingOnly.com, Scott Keith blog at RSPWFAQ.net, and PileDriverWrestling.net.
no, you know, this is what the world is like now. You know, these people have to be trained to protect themselves, but they inverted those expectations.
Didn't Xavier do nothing but recruit kids for a long time?
Civil War done right to a certain extent. Like, I had some serious problems with Civil War and the execution of that event and the breakdown between Captain America and Iron Man. But Schism got it right by inverting your expectations and actually giving both characters a pretty defensible position. Because for all that I've made of, you know, Wolverine being the hypocrite here, it was not a development completely out of left field for him. He was a changed man after M-Day, actually. He had all of his memories restored, which was as much as his mind had been mucked about with, you know, in the years since Weapon X and everything that's been done to him, the psychological and physical torture he's been through. He didn't know up from down. He didn't know his ass from a hole in the ground. You know, Wolverine from day to day, you know, relied on his instincts to get him through, and to survive the battle at hand. But with access to all of his memories, it sort of put him back in touch with whatever type of person he used to be. And he didn't necessarily like what he saw. So that was really humbling. And not to mention kind of the ringer that Wolverine had been put through in the run-up to Schism when Jason Aaron was writing his solo title. It was sort of his personal, like, version of Born Again that Daredevil had in the 80s. Wolverine, like, he died and went to hell and had to fight his way back from that. So that's an experience that I guess changes you. I don't know. That's never happened to me. Maybe you guys could shed some light on it, but yeah. Yeah. Well, May 19th is approaching. So
May 19th.
So at the end of the day, Wolverine's like newfound compassion that he had, I guess you could call it. That was a byproduct of that new sense of perspective that he had. And so it was stuff like he would accuse Cyclops of following in Magneto's footsteps. But I have to think that, you know, again, in the context of the stories and trying to rationalize this stuff, maybe he saw more of himself in what Cyclops was doing at the time than any other character like Magneto. And maybe he was having a little bit of guilt trip, and this was a little bit of projection on his part. So that's what he was acting out against. So anyhow, Wolverine was in the wrong, period. Doesn't matter what he went through. That was his shit. And Cyclops was the one who was being realistic about the way that the world was. And the fact of the matter is, a disproportionate number of young mutants had died violently, and that's even before M-Day. So you got to look at the original, you know, New Mutants. That's three dead bodies. The Hellions under Emma Frost, again, from the early days and the New Mutants, all this stuff. They're all slaughtered. All of them. Generation X, after that, at least two dead members, three arguably. And then you had like the new mutants after the Grant Morrison era. And after M-Day, pretty much all of them were completely wiped out, horrifically maimed, scarred for life, literally put on a bus to be sent away and then blown up. So, yeah, everything changed post M-Day. And the X-Men could not afford to coddle their youth anymore. And they couldn't, they sure as hell couldn't hole up in some mansion in rural New York. And they couldn't deny the threat to their very existence. They didn't have to be soldiers necessarily, but they could at least, you know, equip these young people with the skills that they needed to defend themselves. And that's all it came down to. You know, surround themselves with people who could teach them how to protect themselves or to protect them in lieu of any actual useful offensive abilities, right? Because Not every mutant can shoot laser blasts out of their eyes. Some just shoot fireworks. Some just decipher languages. Some just turn into a sentient fart cloud that has to be contained in a rubber pervert suit. I mean, that, you know, if it gets punctured, you know, tough shit. I guess that's the end of that. Mild discomfort for anyone around them and the end of them. I mean, that's, again, another Grant Morrison contribution. So, you know, Wolverine's concerned with, like, I guess, trying to be the good guy and the elder statesman. Meanwhile, Cyclops fireworks. Was taking stock of the world around him, and he was acting accordingly, the way I see it. And so they kind of went their separate ways after that. And once again, in the conflict of Wolverine versus Cyclops emerges on top. He is right in this philosophical debate that they have. And that's my take on that. That brings us to where I have my psychological break with the world. Because what happened was there was this thing called A versus X, which was the X-Men versus the Avengers a couple summers ago, which puts the X-Men, particularly Cyclops, into direct conflict with the Avengers, a.k.a. Captain America. And who just wrote a 5-part series about why Captain America deserves a lot more credit and is the greatest character ever and all this shit? Well...
Staggerly Marshall.
Also an expert on women's wrestling as well.
They're great.
You know, it pains me to say it, but you know, he's first in my heart, but Captain America was a condescending, sanctimonious douche in A versus X. And, you know, I would like to think that that statement should absolve me of any accusations of bias, really, because, like I said, I did just write this series about the guy, and now I'm saying, totally objectively, mind
that
you,
sounds like
that he was a sanctimonious douche, because the gist of the conflict is this, you guys. Okay. The Phoenix Force, you know, the Phoenix, that thing that's pretty much loomed large over the X-Men since the mid-70s, you know, the whole Jean Grey possessed her, or maybe it didn't, and then she went batshit crazy and ate a planet full of asparagus people, and we weren't okay with that because, you know, you shouldn't eat asparagus people. Gives you terrible indigestion, not to mention genocide is a thing we all frown upon. Or at least I do. I can't speak for you guys. But talk about sentient fart clouds and awful gas. I mean, asparagus people. Whew. So anyhow.
It was early 80s. Yeah, 1980.
Yeah, it was like 1980. Yeah, the Dark Phoenix saga is, of course, what I'm referring to. Asparagus people, broccoli people, call them what you will. But the fact is, the Phoenix annihilated them, and they were gone. So that was the end of that. And basically, what happened in A versus X, the central conflict is the Phoenix Force is returning to Earth. And Captain America and his friends are finding this pants-shittingly scary. Like, they're like, oh my God, they ate the asparagus people 30 years ago.
And this,
this
was the
thing
70s,
is headed
right?
for Earth. Now it's going to eat the Earth. And, you know, Galactus has tried to do this. So this is a threat on the scale of Galactus. Holy shit, we got to do something. And Cyclops is like, nah, we got this. And what he wanted to do was position Hope, who was a new character introduced a couple years before that. She was the first new mutant born since M-Day. So she was kind of this character that everybody was rallying behind as the symbolic savior of the mutant race. Whether or not that was going to bear out in substance was yet to be seen. But with the Phoenix coming back to Earth, it was like, oh shit, you know, now maybe we can actually make good on this based on what we've seen of this character Hope and her potential, what she's capable of. If maybe we can put her in touch with the Phoenix Force, she could do some real good here. So her powers had kind of been revealing themselves gradually, and they were going to take and put her as the new would-be avatar of Phoenix. So that's going to avert this supposed kind of vague threat that the Phoenix poses and save the mutant race at the same time. Mind you, we don't even know what the Phoenix is trying to do, but Captain America and the Avengers are flipping their shit over it. Cyclops, meanwhile, knows almost everything about the Phoenix. This is because his former dead wife was its previous host. They were psychically bonded, all that good stuff. So everything that the Phoenix experienced at the time, he felt as well. So he kind of knows what that character's MO is, not to mention the fact that years before this, in a series called X-Men Phoenix End Song, which was the last time Phoenix came back to Earth. And by the way, no one batted an eye, X-Men Avengers included. It was revealed that the Phoenix like fed on his power. So Cyclops and his optic blast could like power this psychic entity, and it was like a drug to it. And that's why like this creature was in love with him in the guise of his former flame Jean Grey, which was a sort of weird retcon, but all right, as you will. Again, comics, right? So his powers are like crack to this thing, and it's a cosmic entity on the scale of, you know, something like I said, Galactus or any of the other cosmic beings in the Marvel Universe. And all this shit just seems to be irrelevant to the Avengers. They're not going to let, you know, events just play out as they will. They're not going to let the X-Men handle their shit like they have in the past. They're like, no, it's too dangerous. We have to step in. Let's attack first. So they antagonize this omnipotent cosmic force. Seems like a bad plan. And not surprisingly, they fuck up spectacularly. And that makes the Phoenix split into all these different individual parts that possesses different characters. And they were called the Phoenix Five. And that's kind of the plot twist of AVX here again. They go on to do some stuff that's not altogether terrible, but eventually they turn the world into a police state, which we can all agree is probably a bad thing. And like as each member of the Phoenix Five got defeated, the power of the remaining hosts would increase, and Cyclops was left as like the last one standing. And so they're under the influence of this, you know, cosmic force, not acting of their own volition. And Cyclops, with the full Phoenix power, goes like all Dark Phoenix on everybody until Hope stepped in, stole the power away. She pretty much tamed it, and in the process, jump-started the mutant race, and everybody was saved, and we put M-Day behind us forever. In other words, exactly what Cyclops said was going to happen in the first place. So pretty much his original thesis was proven right, and he has the mother of all get out of jail free cards because of what he did while possessed by the Phoenix. That's like what we normally call a diminished capacity defense, right? How does Captain America respond to this? He throws Cyclops in this ruby quartz lined holding cell and declares him public enemy number one. You know, as many times as the Scarlet Witch has lost her shit because she forgot that she had kids and then remembered that she had kids and went crazy, but then forgot she had kids again and went crazy, and then remembered she had kids, but they died and went crazy. I think that we could kind of cut Cyclops some slack here, considering he was under the influence of an omnipotent cosmic being, and he didn't exactly seek out this power. It just sort of happened because Iron Man fucked something up. And what it comes down to is Cyclops throughout all of this was right. And people didn't agree with him because of his lack of social graces. It wasn't so much what he said, but the way that he said it. And here's where I kind of can compare Cyclops to Bret the Hitman Hart in 1997. Where if...
Oh, God.
I knew you would. And I'm preying on your emotions here. But, you know, maybe he shouldn't have said that if you were going to insert an enema into the United States, that you would do it in, was it Pittsburgh?
Pittsburgh.
Maybe he shouldn't have said that. But the point remains that he wasn't exactly wrong. It was just the way that he said it, right? You got to put it somewhere. I mean, come on. It's not to take anything away from Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's kind of like...
I'm sorry for that reaction. Fan emails.
Here comes angry Greg Grassino. Here's who that comes.
I so welcome them. So, I mean, ultimately what we have is a situation where this character is made a pariah, and it's not through his own actions or his culpability, but... Pittsburgh, again, just yep. His lack of social graces. Like, he can't get along with people, and they've branded him an asshole. Doesn't mean he's wrong. It just means they don't like the way he's framing his argument.
I think we could all agree that would be a nice place for an enemy.
That,
you know,
apparently has been enough to mark Cyclops as this villain. But, I mean, when you look at the precedent...
Oh, Pittsburgh's a great city.
Literally every single other character who's gone down that path. You know, I mentioned Scarlet Witch, but I mean, let's look at Jean Grey. You know, talk about the Phoenix. We let her off the hook. Charles Xavier. Yeah, Emma, who's never even been possessed, but is just a reformed villain. But Xavier, you know, Onslaught, does this ring any bells? Fuck, even Wolverine himself, when he died and got resurrected as a hand assassin. Like, they've all gotten off scot-free because of this. And apparently, because Cyclops is a dick, he has to be thrown in jail and, you know, never let out and never given any consideration as to what his position was and where he was coming from and what other characters, contribution to this whole fuck up that was the AVX situation was. So
Emma Frost,
you know, it's like you may not like him as a character, but to label him as wrong and to label him as philosophically going down a dark path is just totally off base. I mean, yeah, he's a mutant freedom fighter, but he's essentially being the guy who allows Wolverine to run his little Jean Grey school where they can, you know, hole up in this mansion and turn a blind eye to the real world. He's being the guy that, you know, gets shit done, and nobody really wants to be the person who does that, but that's who Cyclops is, and that's why he's right.
I find it, well, that sadly... lacked something. It lacked the anger and passion that Cyclops himself lacks.
Oh, no.
You know what?
Here we go.
I'm sorry, but...
Trolling.
I'm sorry, but my argument is not invalidated just because I have failed to, like, ingratiate myself towards you, because you obviously weren't paying attention.
Now, this is what I came for.
If you think Cyclops lacks anger and you clearly, you know, you say that Todd Russell, you say that Todd Sellers, excuse me, now I'm getting really worried.
Was every bit as epic as I imagined meeting my friend.
I'm amalgamating members of our channel.
When did this happen?
I'm amalgamating. There's, Jesus
wait
Christ.
A minute, there's the amalgam reference. We need a Golgothan shit monster reference and a Fabian reference. And we'll have checked off every...
You know what? Take a shot every time that I mention X Factor Volume 1 with Louise Simonson, the Golgothan shit monster, or Fabian Nicieza, or...
Did you say X-Factor Volume 1?
I did.
The team that Cyclops left his wife and child to join?
Yes, that very same team. And you know what? People have been giving him shit for that for years, and I think that's a big reason why everybody hates the character.
Bad husband, bad father, bad hero.
Absolutely true. All these things are absolutely true, but you know what? They also make him a more interesting character. And you know what? People give credit to all these other characters who are flawed for being interesting, but as soon as Cyclops, the archetypical hero through, you know, however many years, does something that, you know, like a normal fucked up person would do, all these other characters might do, he gets shit for it because, oh, you know, that's just wrong. And it's like they wanted to vilify the character rather than to look at it as an example of either poor writing or character development or what have you. And it's just like, I don't get that. You know, there's different ways you could look at the situation, but to like take it out on the character and to say that, well, what a dick he was for doing that. Yeah, it's a shitty thing that he did, but look at it from the standpoint of this is not a real person. This is just a comic book character. And if it adds to, you know, their history and contributes to, you know, making them a little bit more rounded, even if it's not a positive contribution, which it certainly wasn't. Like you said, he left his wife and infant son. I mean, that's pretty fucked up. But it just goes to show, like, people can be terrible in managing their personal lives, but having that sense of duty and, you know, some kind of professional loyalty and the way that these priorities can get skewed, that doesn't make them an interesting character. It doesn't make them necessarily likable, but it does make them someone that you might want to read about and follow.
And then
it does.
The girl, Jean Grey, dies. Who does he end up in bed with the next week? Emma Frost.
Emma Stone?
God, we can only hope that it would have been Emma Stone.
Was that? Did he trade up for him? Yeah. I don't know. Okay.
Yes.
That was a Grant Morrison thing. And that's where I also flipped shit, because it was like, oh, you know, Cyclops going to mope over Jean Grey again. You know, what an asshat. Like, he, you know, she died and then he moved on to Madeline and dumped her ass as soon as Jean came back. When is this character going to stop revolving around Jean fucking Grey, right? And as soon as he drops her ass and just says,
and it gives them a reason to grow
dead
out that old superhero tradition of the angry
standing
beard
on her fucking headstone, you know, in the graveyard, and says, hey, Scott, don't you want to inherit the world? And like he looks at her and he's like, just kind of falling back on his old shitty like 90s characterization.
That was a
and
Grant
then he
Morrison
just turns
thing,
and
right?
looks at her and goes, yes, and grabs her, fucking lays one on her, and they probably banged right on the headstand. They just that's where the comic ended, because they only had 32 pages. But I mean, it's like, what do you want? Do you want this guy to constantly be revolving around this character who's, you know, just goes through death like it's just a change of outfit, or do you want him to break out of that mold? And fuck if he didn't break out in the most dramatic way possible, making out on her damn headstone. Hell yeah.
And with that, Cyclops drops the mic and walks away. Oh, God. Aw.
Well, oh, God. Actually, guys, that's, I don't know if you can hear it. I don't actually have access to these sound effects, but
you
think I hear
me,
a storm rumbling because we're about to enter the lightning round.
To choose from there, and as much as I
and that
want
means
a,
that we're coming to an end, but we're going to close with something that we weren't originally going to lightning round, but I think it will make sense in this context and also be a quick answer.
Excuse
here.
Me, only Nathan
Justice
Fillion
League
can play that
movie
character
was recently
only
announced.
Only Nathan Fillion can play every comic
right now,
book character.
What we will get
as
into
I push my glasses
is
up.
Apparently 9 DC movies are in development. The lightning round question this month, gentlemen, if there is one DC Comics property that you would like to see in film that hasn't been brought to film yet.
Yes.
What is it? And I am going to start.
My top pick of the Flash is actually
our discussion
off the table because
with
of the
Mr.
TV
Russell
show coming,
Sellers.
And I have this sneaking suspicion that if it's as big a hit as Arrow, that we may be seeing Grant Gustin folded into the larger DCU or DC film universe.
You mean Nathan Fillion?
Yes. Yeah. It's always Nathan Fillion. Every character is Nathan freaking Fillion. But if I had to pick. One absolute, and it's the one that hasn't been officially announced yet. It's Wonder Woman. She is
by Nathan Fillion.
Yeah, and you know what? Why not?
Nathan Fillion plays Zeus, her father, in the movie.
You know what? He's probably got the top heaviness ability to play that role now. So yeah, there it is. I'll make a man boob joke. But anyway. Wonder Woman would absolutely be the number one property I think that DC and Warner Brothers need to fast track of all the films that they've got coming down the pipe. They need to get that one not only out in a timely manner, they need to get it absolutely right. And I mean, Wonder Woman is so overdue for a big screen appearance. And I know she's going to be in the Man of Steel sequel, but. She's long
like
overdue
it.
To have
put
her
him in,
own
put him in a garter.
Film.
It'll work.
And, you know, I really hope that that's the direction they're going because if there ever there was, you know, a you know one
fired
female
more.
Superhero that everybody knows and everybody can say, if you say name a female superhero, Wonder Woman has got to be the first one named by just about anybody. And, yeah.
Vertigo or DC or either is okay. Why the Last Man? Wolverine was right, Cyclops was wrong.
Wolverine was full of shit, and I think I've actually sold myself on Wonder Trans Woman by Nathan Fillion. If not that, then Booster Gold.
Rebooted Green Lantern with my own dream casting that we will discuss at a later date in a movie that is at least 80% cosmically based.
Definitely. Well, we got to move along so we can get this over with, but we got Wonder Woman on the board. Todd, what would be your pick? Either or. Let's move on to Tim. Tim, what would be your one choice? Okay, I like it. Outside the box, I like it.
Blink was right.
Blink
was right.
Gateway was silent.
Excellent. I like
Forge
that
was a Native
well.
American.
I am going to go with a movie that has already been done and been done horribly and will never get done again because of that.
Bishop
I'm going to go with Jonah
Jerry
Hex. I would love to see a really well done Jonah Hex movie because I love the character. I think it's awesome.
Excellent,
and you could also tie in some of the more eternal characters like Ra's al Ghul into it, things like that. So, but with that, gentlemen, if any of you have a final word, perhaps Wolverine and or Cyclops being full of excrement or any other type of comments, you
Yay.
Can make them now.
Yay.
Hey, Tim. My goodness.
Blink was right. And with that, Onslaught was a mistake. We are going to wrap up this podcast. We hope you have enjoyed this trip through the ethnic diverse, even in the 90s, by the way. The comics podcast of Doom is wrapping up here, and we thank you for your time listening to our ramblings and our rants and our raves and our randomly laughing at each other for jokes that probably aren't even funny to anybody else, but we hope you enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. Folks, have a good one. And the feelings will start at the back of the knees. We'll watch through the holes strategically cut in your path of war while you jump. Perfectly timed and it's taken a skin. The poison still lives like cement in your veins. Your rise to the back, these bars are the lies. Perfectly timed and it's taken a skin. Find it ourselves, the strength to deceive. To admit that we're wrong. To the things that we've done. This is my life, I will not be ashamed. Listen to me!